Hello and welcome to My Abnormal Life Podcast, Episode 4. In this episode, I'll be sitting down with my dad and getting his perspective on my upbringing, things that I went through, and how he was such a huge part of who I am today. Thanks for tuning in and enjoy the show. Welcome back to My Abnormal Life, as told by me, as heard by you. This is Brock Baldwin. We've got a different episode today. I'm sitting down here with my dad while visiting in Bismarck, North Dakota, and I know I've given my perspective on my life, as told by me, as I've said in a lot of my introductions, but I want to give my dad the opportunity to voice his emotions and how he felt about what I went through in my formative years and how that affected him. So Dad, if you wouldn't mind introducing yourself and going through Went through some of my past, if you will.
Hello, my name's Marty Baldwin. I'm Brock's dad. I'm a retired computer programmer from about 30 years worth. Worked for the state here for quite a while Brock was living here in Bismarck with me. I can give some insights into, things that went on in Brock's formative years when we lived down in Oklahoma. We moved down there from Canada, and at that point in time, I was a single parent, and Brock was my responsibility to look after. And Brock underwent going to grade school down there and made his circle of friends and played baseball and pretty much did kid things, the innocent years. After about 3 or 4 years down in Oklahoma, we moved up here to Bismarck, and Brock was, about 10 years old then, I guess.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
So it was.
And touching back to moving to Oklahoma, what was there a job opportunity that you were chasing?
Actually, I had worked previously for the city of Calgary in Canada, and I had been offered a job opportunity in Tulsa, Oklahoma with one of the energy companies down there, and I had accepted the job, and I went down to Oklahoma to start to work there and went in to go through the processing, and they abruptly told me that they didn't really need me and that they were going to have to withdraw the offer. So Brock and I were kind of left high and dry. I was unemployed. I didn't have a job. I had to start looking again real quick. And of course, because I was outside my network area, Oklahoma was, even though I was born down there, I hadn't lived there for 20 years, 30 years. So I didn't really have a network. I had to go shopping around for anything I could do to make a living. And Unfortunately, the IT industry at that point was pretty slow, at least for people in programming at that point around Tulsa. So I had to scratch and scrimp to try and get any kind of a job I could to make ends meet, because I was bringing Brock up, and of course I had to keep a roof over our heads and food on the table. And that's how we ended up in a little town called Haskell, Oklahoma.
Yeah. And from what I remember at that time, I was, in my innocent years, I didn't really know what a job and an income was at the time. I just knew that food was coming in and groceries were, and I just, understanding until, I got to 17, 18 when we talked about living in Oklahoma. You had mentioned that we were on food stamps at one point. And I had no idea until that time when we talked about actually, being young and moving from Canada and being taught Celsius and centimeters, and then having to completely shift and relearn everything that I had known up until I was 7 years old. Being in third grade and having to basically relearn everything was scary and intimidating. The culture shock. But what were some things that you noticed when I was younger that that you would have done differently, I guess.
Well, I think real, thinking back to that point in time, and you mentioned the culture shock and having to relearn things. Even as an adult, I would have gone through that. I mean, I went through it when I went to Canada initially, having to change my perspective, and the way things, the way people are there is, was different than the way they are in Oklahoma. There's subtle differences, but they're there. The relearning the imperial system as opposed to the metric system, that was part of it. I mean, Canada actually changed to the metric system while I was in high school in Canada. And then when we moved back down to Oklahoma, I had to, recalibrate things, so to speak. The idea of a vehicle was, miles per hour instead of kilometers per hour. That's still an issue. Once in a while, it's still confusing. Look at your speedometer, and says one thing, but really, it's supposed to be saying something else. So there was a bit of a culture shock for me too. And I think as far as as the impact on you, on Brock, I should say, I didn't view it as being too severe because he hadn't. He was only in third grade, so it wasn't like he had, it wasn't ingrained in him. He was still forming his logic patterns, his thought processes. So it seemed to me that he was fitting in pretty well with his friends, and he was doing okay in school. He seemed to almost enjoy school, like as much as a kid can. And he had, friends around the house that he had met in the neighborhood that he enjoyed spending time with them, and he took quite a liking to baseball, which is a big thing in Oklahoma. Sports is a lot more of a lot more of a priority down there than it ever was in Canada, and for sure, and even here in North Dakota, it's kind of a minor thing. In Canada, it was all about academia, and up here in North Dakota, it's not near as important. How good of an athlete you are, or how well you play a sport, as it is in Oklahoma. I mean, that's a big deal down there. One extreme and then the other.
Yeah, and that was kind of something that I noticed and I had to adjust to when we did move up to North Dakota. Being that it is a colder environment, the hockey and the winter sports were a little bit more focused, and going from being on one of the best all-star teams in Oklahoma and being not to toot my own horn, but being one of the best pitchers in Oklahoma at the time in my age group, and moving up to Bismarck and having the fundamental skills and ability to really be able to coach my own little league team at the time, being like 12, 10 to 12 years old, how disciplined I was at that time, it's something that I still take pride in now. And to play in the 12 and under and the 10 and unders when I fir when we first moved up here, it was frustrating, because baseball was something that I poured so much of my love and my energy into, and it seemed like it didn't matter to a lot of the kids. Like, it was something that I related to so well, and it was something that me and you spent a lot of time together playing catch, and you taught me a lot of my fundamentals, and it wasn't just, for the sake of playing baseball, but the things that I learned from playing, like the camaraderie and being compassionate and understanding and, people's skills or their lack thereof and what their strengths are and what they aren't. But yeah, that was definitely frustrating for me.
Yeah, my perspective on things when I think back to it, and the move from Oklahoma up to here at the point in time we made that, obviously it had gotten to the point where, you know, me hunting jobs down there, going from everything from a call center tech to working in the in the hospital as a receptionist to working in Brahms ice cream shop scooping ice cream, got to the point where I was pretty frustrated because, you know, I was really, you know, doing well in Calgary as a computer programmer. I had an honest living, and, you know, being on food stamps was a real slap in my face, it kind of woke me up. But there came a point in time when I needed a change. I had to get out from under the situation we were in financially down there and move on to something else, and made a decision, well, if I'm going to be down here suffering, if you will, I might as well be up near Bismarck, this where my mom lived, where Brock's grandma lived, was up here around Bismarck and Mandan, and I thought, well, I'll move up there. If I'm going to have to be miserable, I might as well be around family and be miserable rather than down there, and I might get some support or some encouragement from my family. And so we made the decision to come on up here and set up shop. And I think, thinking back, the beginning of Brock's disappointment, if you will, that, you know, kind of set him off on a bad track or a bad approach to things, was the difference between how something that he really loved, baseball and athletics and the sports aspect of things, how much of a difference it was when he came up here. As an adult, you know, I could deal with it. It wasn't the end of the world to me. But for him, I think it was a tough thing to adjust to. I mean, you went from being every kid down there. There were, you know, the exception to the rule was a kid who couldn't play sports at all, who was just inept. Whereas up here, it was more often the case that almost every kid on the team, except for with a couple of exceptions, were not really that skilled because they didn't, you know, they didn't put a lot of emphasis into it. Mm-hmm. And the coaching was pretty much the same. A lot of the coaches, they were just there because they happened to be the adults. One of their children was on the team, and they needed to have a coach, so they volunteered to do it, you know, and that's a good thing, but they just didn't have a lot of sports know-how. It wasn't not a slap in their face or anything. It's just that they didn't have the skills or the abilities. They were just the adult in the room, and they were supposed to be helping these kids enjoy the sport. And I think that,
which is what it's all about in the end.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of it got lost with things like, I remember a particular event where Brock was pitching for his team in the Mandan League. I can't remember. I think it was probably the 10 to 12 year old or maybe 11 and 12 year old classification, and he was pitching, and they started changing the rules. They told one of the umpires actually told Brock that you're not allowed to throw that fast. You can't throw that hard because the kids can't. You know, it's intimidating for the kids, and then it's like, you know, that got to me because I thought, well, right away, the encouragement of mediocrity, you know, like you don't do your best, mm-hmm. you know, just, you know, and I understand playing the sport to have fun is important, but I also understand that doing your best is important too. And sometimes doing your best is just as important, if not more, than having fun. Mm-hmm. So if you go into something halfway, and this is something that I've always instilled in Brock, if you go into something halfway, you're going to get half the results. You know, so you don't give halfway. So when the umpire tells Brock to don't throw so hard, That's not good. And obviously he had to take something off of it. And then, you know, the umpires made decisions like, well, the strike zone is, you know, now nose to toes, you know. And it was, you know, anywhere, any, as long as the ball was over the plate, it was a strike.
Yep. Yep.
And they made some silly adjustments, you know, that basically destroyed the game as I perceived it. And I think as Brock perceived it, as even though he was a kid, they took things away from it. And that had an impact on Brock. You know, all of a sudden, something that he was really in love with, the sport, it was being made little of, made light of. You know, let's change the rules. Let's make it different. You know, you can't throw that hard. You can't throw a curveball. You're not allowed to do this because that, you know, the other kids can't hit the ball. You know, and it was during that era, I think, that, you know, it started showing up in all aspects of our lives here, and I think in North America, the idea of, you know, everybody gets a trophy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no such thing as, you know, nobody finishes first and second and third. Everybody gets a trophy and everybody wins.
Everybody's entitled to that, regardless of their performance.
Yeah, and I think that was a big thing. It had a big impact on Brock's way of regarding things.
And that was something that I had to adjust to again and adapt. And, you know, being told that I can't throw that hard or I can't do my best and having to, you know, basically alter who I was and being told I couldn't be who I was, you know, that kind of started a mentality for me at such a young age that was, I don't want to say rebellious, but rebellious. It created a lot of negativity in my mind, and that was hard for me to overcome at the time. I had never really been put in a situation like that before, and being so young, I guess I didn't really know how to approach it other than, you know, this is the sport that I love, and I guess if this is the only show in town, then this is what I have to do.
Yeah, if you're going to play it, you got to play it their way. That's, and sometimes, you know, the choices aren't there. You got to do with, you know, got to go go with what you got.
Exactly.
And, you know, I think like I say, it had an impact on a lot of things, the way things are done. Why should I do my best when doing my best isn't going to get me anything? And I think in a lot of aspects, thinking back on it now, it had an impact on, you know, things like Brock's performance in school. Why should I do my best when, you know, I don't have, you know, they're going to tell me not to do my best? And I think the impact, you know, maybe it's not an excuse, but it's relevant. I mean, a lot of the kids never had the opportunity to be in Oklahoma and play baseball. They were up here, maybe they were playing hockey, maybe they were doing something else, but I guarantee you, if you did the same thing to a kid who was up here playing hockey, moved him down to Oklahoma, and, you know, he found out that hockey was really a joke down there, it would have an impact on how he, especially a young kid, how they perceived the world, how they related to things. And I think that had a lot to do with, you know, how Brock ended up, you know, being a mediocre student. It's not that he never showed any signs of being not intelligent. He just, he wasn't motivated. And I think that, you know, that baseball incident, that whole change, had a lot to do with Brock's motivation.
And kind of recapping over that happening now, I guess it's kind of an aha moment for me, that little instance of being told that I can't be who I am, you know, changed who I was and started me on a track of, you know, having to search for my identity. And as we go through life, I think, you know, we're knocked out of who we are and who we think we are and have to find it again. And that's something that, you know, you went through too with That opportunity basically being restrained from you when we moved down to Oklahoma. And you had to.
Yeah, I think a lot of learning can be achieved by, going through that situation as a kid. You make the best of what you're given, but to try and not let a setback determine who you are, but rather use that as a motivator or as a way to strengthen your character. I mean, I think that me going down there and ending up, turned down on that job, and then ending up being impoverished, and realizing, I went from being, a fairly well-paid computer programmer to being serving ice cream at a at a Brahms ice cream shop. It was quite a shock, but I think, and at the time it was tough for me to deal with it. And I think Brock, of course, he experienced that because he was with me. He saw, what was going on, or he experienced it. I don't know if he understood it at the time, but it's important to keep your bearings and don't just throw your hands up and give up, but try to make adjustments. And I think that's obviously the move up here to Bismarck ended up being a positive, because I ended up, getting into the IT industry eventually and getting back on the right track. But if I had thrown my arms up in Oklahoma and just given up, maybe Brock would have become a great baseball player down there, but I might have been brown bagging it on the street or something.
Yeah, and I mean, that draws back to a whole bunch of shoulda, coulda, wouldas. I mean, I don't regret how I've ended up now, and I don't think you regret, at least as much as you want to hold that back from letting the past create circumstances that are negative in your head and draw walls for you. I think I've turned out pretty well over the years. I mean, as I spoke about in my episodes, I've went through some dark times, and that's something that I want to touch on for a little bit here and get your perspective on. As I started developing and adjusting and shifting into, being a teenager and a preteen, what are some of the things that you started noticing, as we moved up here when I was in seventh and eighth grade and as I continued into my baseball, what were some of the things that you noticed?
Well, again, it was a little bit scary for me. At the point in time, I started seeing things like, the school performance, playing hooky from school. And obviously, I wasn't home. I was going to work. And I think at one point in time, we were living with my mom. And she wasn't really capable of monitoring, Brock coming and going from school. A lot of times he'd stay home from school or not go in. That started troubling me. And, I felt guilty because it was my responsibility to see to it that, he got an education and that he was parented properly. And it was, like I say, scary because I didn't know how to approach it. And I think thinking back to that time, all I could do was tell Brock, the tales that you usually tell a kid, not tales but truths, that you have to have an education, you have to, going to school is like, I often say, an initiation to life. You may not learn anything in school that you're going to use in later life. I mean, there's a lot of things they're going to teach you that have absolutely nothing to do with what job you may be doing. Like, understanding trigonometry or geometry or algebra may not have anything to do with what you end up doing in life. But the ability to work through or reason through a problem that you use to get those things done in school, that ability to reason and ability to figure out possible angles and approaches is you're going to use that no matter what kind of a job you get into. It's often I kind of go off on a tangent here, but often people always say, well, kids playing video games, that's a bad thing. But a lot of times video games offer you the opportunity to problem solve.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're problem solving, that's a good thing. That's a good thing to develop as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Problem solving skills are important because no matter what job you have, there's going to be problems and you're going to have to solve them. But going to school, like I say, it's an initiation because you learn more at school than trigonometry and geometry. You learn social skills, how to get along with other people and behave. You learn discipline. It starts giving you an introduction to what it's like to, responsibility to have to be there at 8 in the morning or 8:30. And then when the bell rings, you change classes, you get a routine.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, as sad as it may be, or structured as it may be, that's how life in the North American continent is. You have a job, you're supposed to show up at a particular time or carry out a certain set of tasks and get them done. And then, you move on, you have your rest period, and then you move on and go home for the night or go on your holidays, whatever. But those are, that's, so school is an initiation. And a lot of times, if you think of it as that, it would make it a lot easier for people to continue on, to just say, okay, I can go through this. It's only going to be, a few years. You only go to school from the time you're 5 years old till the time you're 18 to finish high school, or 17. And then you have a choice whether to go on to tech school or college or, take an apprenticeship or something else. But it's important to endure the initiation. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's people go through initiations all the time and never think anything of it. I mean, when when you talk about a gang, you're going to join a street gang. You go through an initiation there, and it's a heck of a lot worse than school. And there's a lot of kids nowadays that'll go through that initiation and never even think anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
But boy, they can't handle, 6 years of elementary school and then 3 years of middle school and then 4 years of high school. Oh my God, the world's coming to an end. Well, no, you get in there and you plug at it, get through the initiation, and then you're your own master.
Yep. And, I guess speaking of my past with school and my history, let me just express my gratitude that we're not in a communist culture where it is so controlled and so overbearing that you don't have a choice in what your career path is, or, you have a family tradition, and, if you extradite from that at all, you're severed from your family, or you're thought to be, less than a person. And, high school now has changed even since, I'm 26 now, and 10 years ago when I was in high school, the shift into social media and texting and posting on Facebook or MySpace, I guess at that time, that's a lot of kids' identities now. And, being in a space and time where that's such another extension of your identity, like your online presence, if you're not posting on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter, then, I guess that is somewhat an essence of, not being a person, because there's a digital footprint with everything now. If you send a text to your friend, or post something online, that's forever in a lot of ways. I mean, you post something on the internet, it's always in existence, so you can find it somewhere in some way. And that's a scary thought. But, as time progresses on and technology advances, I think the most difficult years for high school and elementary and junior high, and I guess parents now, is, fashioning and being a good role model and teaching their kids to not think that they're entitled to something, regardless of, just being there and existing, doing your best, being a good person, being authentic and genuine in your actions. And that's something that you've always instilled in me, being empathetic and showing compassion to people. And that's something that I'll always hold close to my chest. And being grateful that I had an upbringing that, while, was hard at times, I was able to shape and become who I am now. And, one of the hardest times of my life was going through the transition after I got my GED to finding what I was going to end up doing with my career. After I got my GED, it was kind of like, okay, I got my GED. Now what? I didn't know whether to get a part-time job or go to college.
I think that's, that's not unusual, I don't think, for anybody. When you say you got your GED, now what? There's a lot of kids, they get their high school diploma, and it's like, now what? There's probably quite a number that say, well, I'm gonna get my high school diploma, and then I'm gonna go to college. They don't know what they're gonna do, but they know they're gonna go to college. And for me, it's my own personal opinion, is that's a really dumb approach. If you don't know what you're gonna do, you don't have any business going to college. They kind of changed things in that you didn't have to announce your major until, you've been in college for a couple of years. Then you pick a major. They call it general studies. So I'm going to take, English, and then I'm going to take social studies and, these mamby-pamby subjects before I pick a major, just so I can say I'm in college. Well, college is not the answer. It's a tool you use to get where you're going to go. I mean, I can relate, from my own personal experience. I never got a degree in college. That may have made it difficult for me to land jobs, like when I was in Oklahoma in looking for jobs in the IT industry. Not having a degree probably had an impact on whether I could land a job or not. But once I had a job, I had worked as a computer programmer for 20 years. It didn't have any impact on whether I could do the job or not. Having a degree had nothing to do with my skill as a programmer. It had more to do with having letters behind my name. I mean, how I ended up being a programmer was, at work they were looking for programmers. They gave an aptitude test to people to see who was capable to do it based on this aptitude. And as luck would have it, I ended up having an aptitude that was skilled for that, and they taught me on the job how to do it. And I ended up liking it, fitting in well, and being able to do a good job at it. And I think that those kinds of opportunities are things that they're out there and they happen for people. You don't have to go to college or university to end up being successful. And being successful should be defined by you. It shouldn't be defined by somebody else. Having a degree doesn't mean you're successful. I mean, I've had acquaintances that have PhDs. That, they're, to put it bluntly, dumbasses. You have a PhD, but that doesn't mean you're smart. It just means you went to school for a long time and you were successful at being at school. But being a good student doesn't necessarily mean you're a good person. Doesn't mean you're a bad one either. But it doesn't guarantee you success just because you went to school. So, I think people need to keep that in mind. When you're in high school and you're a young adult, think about things that you like to do or that you're good at and you like to do, and then pursue something along those lines. And heaven forbid you go out there and start to do something and you don't like it. It's not the end of the world. You can always choose another path. Like Brock said earlier, you know, we're not living in a socialistic society or communistic society, thank God. Hopefully we never will be. Those choices are there. And, you know, as long as you can keep your chin up and don't let setbacks, you know, determine who you are, you'll be fine.
Mm-hmm. And grinding through the hard times and, you know, understanding that the world owes you nothing, but not letting that handicap you. And I know it's hard to overcome the basic fact that it's a dark world out there. That's, you know, a scary sentence in its own right, but, you know, using your support system and your enjoy, what you enjoy to do, there's always a way to monetize it. And whether it's, you know, collecting bobbleheads or selling jailbroken iPhones, there's always a way to find a way to mold that and shape that into what you end up doing. And not to say that money defines happiness, but it is, you know, a resource that we need to survive on the planet. And, you know, if there is some way for you to use that as an extension of your happiness, so you can survive and provide for your family and, you know, become the person that you want to and not who your parents or your friends or your great grandparents did this, so you must do it. Or, you know, the business is getting passed down to you and it's a company that you don't believe in, and, you know, you feel like you have to take on the throne, so to speak. You know, there is always a different pathway, as my dad said, and that's something that I've always looked up to him for, is that he didn't give up where he very well could have. And it's just awesome to sit here now and look back over everything that's happened and, you know, be appreciative and grateful that we didn't end up living in the streets. We always had a roof over our heads and food on the table, you know, no matter what. Even though there was hard times, there was, you know, a means to an end, so to speak. And to be able to sit here and recollect over it, it's been awesome to, you know, get your perspective on things. And before we tie things to a close here, I did want to get your outlook on, you know, my dark times where I was relying on alcohol, on drugs, on other people's opinion of myself to.
Yeah, I think for me, those times, there was a lot of times I saw things that probably for a different adult or for a different parent, they may have triggered something. For me, I didn't react as harshly as I probably should have, but I might. But I, in my own defense, because of how I was brought up and what I was exposed to, the fact that I was around a lot of people that did a lot of drinking and a lot of partying, and, you know, even well into my career as a programmer, I was also a what would be called a bouncer at a bar. And, you know, I fraternized with a lot of those people, so I became aware that, you know, people do these things and they enjoy them. And, you know, me intervening in your social life, I wasn't going to do that unless it got right out of hand. And, of course, from my perspective, it wasn't right out of hand. You know, the parties in the basement, you know, yeah, they got loud and they got a lot too many people, and, you know, it's kind of set me off, and, you know, I'd say, wow, what, you know, how am I going to deal with this? And I think a lot of times I just let it go. You know, at the point in time you had your situation where you had overdosed, then it hit home and I said, okay, wait a minute, you know, I know what that is, because I had seen other people or experienced them in my younger days where they had actually gone down that path. And then I knew, you know, hey, this is serious. I don't really recall being intervention-minded at that point. I think we just sat down and talked about it and said, hey, I remember telling you, if you keep going down that path, you make one bad decision, you're going to ruin your whole life, mm-hmm. And it only takes a couple of seconds, just, one bad choice, and it's not worth it, no matter how good it makes you feel. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think that, you mentioned earlier about people that take their identities from their online presence or their internet. And I mean, for me, my personal sentiments, and because, I'm 69 years old. So I came up in a time when there was no internet. I was probably one of the first avid users of the internet, and as far as the private people went. So online presence was, that was like you logged on. There was no communication. You logged on and you downloaded information. It was strictly educational. And then it went from that to chat rooms, and from that to, MySpace and Facebook and ICU, which is a Yahoo facility that are similar to Yahoo. And it just expanded from there. But even back then, 1990 or 1989, people started deriving their identities and the from being online, and the being behind the safety of being anonymous. You could say and do whatever you wanted to, or say you had done whatever you wanted to online, and never be held accountable for it. And that's a dangerous thing. And I mean, now I look back at it and, I say to those people who, if you take your identity from being online and from what people regard you as from your online presence, you're a loser, and I'm sorry, but that's what you are. Because if you can't function in the real world and deal with the identity you have there that you've built in your relationships person to person, you're not going to be able to function because, you don't, everything isn't online. As much as they'd like to tell you or to have you believe it, it's not. You have to deal face to face once in a while. At some point in time, you're dealing with another human being. And being anonymous online isn't dealing with another human being face to face.
And I completely resonate and agree with that. To see a lot of my generation, relying on the former rather than the latter of, actual human interaction, it's scary in a way. And I know a lot of, I guess, your generation likes to point the finger at Facebook and MySpace to contribute to, the societal norm of not being able to interact and communicate in person. But, in a lot of the ways, that's just the platform. It's the people using the platform that, going back to human interaction.
It allows people to carry out behaviors and not have to be responsible for them. It's a lot of things happen that, when there's no consequences for a behavior, the behavior is just going to deteriorate. It's going to get worse and worse. There's going to be people that react to it. But basically, I just look at it as it's a way of encouraging people to carry out, behaviors, to be anonymous, to be able to say and do things or not be answerable, even if they're not anonymous, to be able to say something online and not be held accountable for it. It's just not a good thing. It's one thing to walk up to somebody in a bar that you don't know and tell them you think they're a dipstick. That doesn't happen in most cases. Whereas online, you can see that happen all the time. People are constantly belittling someone else because they have a different opinion, because they know they're not going to be held accountable to it because they're not face-to-face.
A keyboard warrior or a troll, I guess.
Exactly. And I think that happens. It encourages it on all those platforms. you know, I look at it as being entertainment. It's not real life. It's a toy. And I mean, if you look at it as a toy and you enjoy it and you use it as entertainment, that's one thing. But when you start living your life there, you know, they might as well put you in the ground and start shoveling dirt over you because you ain't living life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, speaking of living life and, you know, directions and paths, not to bounce around too much here, but you know, after I recovered from, you know, those doctor visits that I went to and overdosing and being prescribed, you know, antidepressants and I had acid reflux for the first time in my life after doing drugs and, you know, drinking alcohol to the point of, you know, it'd take 3 days for me to recover, and during my recovery I would still drink. You know, when I started to, you know, come to my own, and, you know, when I found personal training, what were some of your thoughts as I started studying and when I started taking clients under my wing?
Well, it came as a obviously as a big relief to me because it was a real, shocker for me when you did get taken into the hospital for your overdose. It was like, a real shock to me. I never expected that. I didn't think you had gone down that path. I wasn't aware of it. And when I became aware of it, it was, very shocking. I was very troubled by it, felt guilty about it. So naturally, when you started doing things like taking an interest in personal training, or getting some education online regarding personal training and health and fitness, weight training, I thought, well, this is good. This is something that's got his interest, and I felt relieved that you've finally got your teeth into something that you can stick with and stay tenacious about. I mean, prior to that, I mean, you had gone through several, experimental type jobs, whether it was working at UPS or going, retail sales at JCPenney's or McDonald's, and those things were learning experiences. Everyone you go to, you take something out of. Much the same as what I said about school earlier. It's an initiation. You learn what you like, what you don't like, but you also take some knowledge out of that. Having worked at KFC, you may not know the secret recipe, but you know how the operation works. You saw some of the things that went on there and how they worked. You file that away for future reference, much the same as school. You file it away for future reference. You may never use it, but it's there. But it was a big relief for me when you did that and you got tenacious about it. And when you started taking on clients and helping other people, then I knew you were on the right track. You felt better. You started being more outspoken about it and confident, which is something that I hadn't seen for quite a while. I mean, it go all the way back to baseball days in Oklahoma. I hadn't seen self-confidence like that from you.
So in a way, I had taken the outpouring of love that I had for baseball and kind of refound it in personal training, which, I mean, are not directly related, but, you know, the wellness behind the athletics of baseball and the wellness and, or I guess the all-encompassing wellness of, you know, leading a healthier lifestyle and wellness in general. I think the aspect of, in a lot of ways, I've talked about fitness saving my life, and something that I bring up with even clients, former clients, and clients in the moment, and when I told them my story, I want people to feel about fitness the way that I do, being that it can, create those endorphins that you hadn't felt in years, or, the flexibility and the mobility that you never had to catch up with your grandkids and your children and your friends, or, if you've always wanted to join a softball league but you just never had the energy, and create that self-confidence as well in the fact that you can confide in an activity that doesn't drag you down and make you feel downtrodden. But it was awesome to begin training and to let that increase my scope of influence and being able to impact people's lives the ways that it did. And one thing that's always stood out to my mind is one night when we were out to dinner, I had been frustrated with my training job. I'd taken on so many clients and I was pouring everything that I had into it, and my clients were frustrated because they were canceling on me, not showing up, and I was trying to find my way in the world still, and I wasn't making really any money at the time. And it wasn't just about the money. I still enjoyed working with clients, but I was getting frustrated. I wanted to find the position that would allow me to, move out and start providing for myself. But one of the things that you said was before, striving to be incredible, you should strive to be credible. And, that taking the footsteps toward that, and in the moment, I didn't really understand it. And to be able to say now that, I think I have, in a lot of ways, built the credibility within myself. I mean, regardless of what anybody else tells me that I should be, or who I am, or who I'm not, I don't pander to other people's opinions of myself. And that was, the development of that. That was the beginning of.
Yeah, I think the idea of being credible is, for me, it's kind of like internal. You be credible to yourself. When becoming incredible is when other people recognize that credibility, and then you're incredible. Then somebody else recognizes it. I know that, you went through a stage there where you were, like you say, the almighty dollar isn't really the be all and end all, but you do have to have it to exist in our society. You have to have an income. And I think that, when you get frustrated, like I became frustrated when I went from being a computer programmer to being an ice cream scooper. It became apparent that, I wasn't making near as much money as I was before. I was going to have to learn to adjust or figure out another way to make more money. And I think no matter how much you like a job or love a job, the bottom line is if it's not paying you enough to live on, you've got to augment that somehow. And I think that's part of what led you not away from fitness, but away from, a skew of the personal training aspect of your life that you had embarked on, where you had all those clients and everything was about physical fitness and the gym and working for, for a gym or a fitness facility. And you started looking at, hey, I'm not going to be able to make an honest living doing this. At this particular point in time. So I'm going to have to, take another path. And I mean, you never lost track of the fitness of the training, but you embarked on another track, and when you went to work in the sales area. And I think that, then that gave me more confidence, and I felt more relieved because I knew then you were going to adjust. When it came time to adjust, not only that you loved fitness as much as the physical, the personal training thing, as much as you loved that, just like you had loved baseball previously, but you had moved on to being able to adjust, say, to compensate for the reality that, you know, I'm not going to be able to land a job here in the Bismarck area anyway, with my credentials with personal training that's going to bring me enough income to get me where I want to be. I can still do the physical training. I can still do the personal training. I can still have that thing that I love, but I can also augment my income by selling, whether it be cars or furniture, whatever. You can make that adjustment. When I saw that you could make that adjustment, then I know you'd pretty much, matured, and you'd come to a point in your life where you were ready to, to move on to being an adult, a successful adult, and, making decisions based on, I want to be happy, but to be able to define happiness as not just having a lot of money, but being comfortable with what you're doing and being pleased with the results. Just like, playing baseball wasn't going to make you a lot of money, but you loved it. But you could play baseball and have a job and be happy. Just like personal training, you can still participate in that and fitness and have a job and still be happy. And I think that that's, it was a big relief to see you go through that.
Awesome. And to get your insight now, as we haven't really ever talked about this or attacked it, it's a very wholesome moment wholesome and humbling moment, to know that, you start at humble beginnings become grateful gifts, and if there's any content or value that you guys can take away from this episode is, striving to be credible before becoming incredible. And that note can be your, the ultimatum that you give yourself. If I'm not going to live for myself, then who am I going to live for? And who is influencing me? Who am I influencing? And that being the indicator that, maybe it's the time to take action. And if that is your call to action, and you're listening to this and you've put your career on pause or your hobby on pause and something that you've enjoyed on pause, just know that you can always pick it back up, and there's no reason why you should just lock it away in a safe and throw away the key. Strive to be credible before you strive to be incredible. I think that's where we'll end this episode, guys. Thank you, Dad, for guest appearing. I appreciate you taking the time to sit down and talk with me. If you guys enjoyed the episode, subscribe, support, whatever you got to do, click those buttons, like, comment, give me some feedback. Find me on Instagram, My Abnormal Life. I'll catch you guys in the next episode.